CIN Files, the ultimate Bengals podcast with Nate Lundy.
Welcome into the podcast. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. A lot on tap for the podcast this week as we kick things off. We'll get to our big interview in just a moment. Talk about the big storylines as training camp and the preseason are underway and the start of the regular season is just a couple of weeks away. Plus, we'll do Around the League with the coach, Brian Billick from NFL Network, as we will every week, a chance to visit with the coach. And we'll close things out this week's podcast with Overtime, a six pack of questions. This week's guest, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. But it all gets started with the big interview next.
The big interview.
It's time for the big interview. Let's talk Bengals with from CincyJungle.com. Rebecca Toback joins us. You follow her on Twitter at Rebecca underscore Toback, T-O-B-A-C-K. Rebecca, let's start here. How much of a hangover still exists when you're at practice or when you're talking to coaches or players or anything from last year's playoff game?
I think that they want to say there's not a hangover, but no one will stop talking about it. So, like, it's the first thing that you asked me. It's the first thing that just about anyone who's outside of Cincinnati wants to talk about when they're previewing the season. So I think it's going to be pretty hard for them to get over it and avoid a hangover. But I guess on the other side, they've lost in the playoffs now 5 years in a row, 6 of the last 7 years. So it's nothing new to them. This is just really dramatic fashion. So they have a slogan that they're going with this year, pound the rock. And I think it's this whole mentality of trying to move forward and not get caught up in what happened in the past. But it is going to be difficult, regardless of what they're trying to say, to move forward.
Rebecca, what are they doing differently as they start off this year, if anything, in sort of response to that, in response to the, you know, the tempers in check or things like that? Or are they even addressing it at all?
Yeah, so they are actually having the offense kind of push and test the defensive guys like Vontaze Burfict and Adam Jones and trying to get them angry and get them mad to see what will happen in response. So we've heard that that's happening, but not what the reactions have been. But I think for the most part, they're really just trying to not dwell on it and move forward, but hope that, you know, I know that the Bengals owner came in and spoke to them about how we can't be embarrassed like that again. And I think no one is going to stop talking about how embarrassing it was until they went in the playoffs. So right now they have to work on getting back to the playoffs, and then hopefully if they can do that, win once they're there.
We're talking with Rebecca Toback, CincyJungle.com, about the Bengals here on the podcast. How's the competition going, Rebecca, for that wide receiver two position? Obviously, we all know where A.J. Green is at, but how's the competition for that second wide receiver spot that's so important to take some of the pressure off of A.J.?
Yeah, so right now there's been a little bit of an issue because LaFell is injured. He hurt his hand. So he hasn't played yet in the preseason, but he did practice all week. So they're hoping that he can try and compete for that number two job. Going into the preseason, we all thought that that was his job, and then the rookie Tyler Boyd was going to be the slot receiver and kind of the number three on the team. But he's done incredibly well so far in the preseason. He's really just looked great. There really haven't been mistakes that you'd probably expect from a rookie. So right now he's really pushing for that number two job, which would really change a lot of the dynamic, because going in, I think they assumed he was going to be the slot receiver. Even before the preseason began, Bengals.com had an article that he was the given assumed person for the job. So if he becomes the number two, then that might add another spot on the roster for someone else to come in and be the slot receiver. But this Sunday, they're playing the Jaguars, and it'll really be a big showdown for that number two job, because LaFell is hopefully going to play for the first time and see if he can push through his hand injury. If he plays through the game and then decides that he's not going to be able to continue through the season with that injury, he's going to need to get surgery, which could keep him out for 6 weeks, and then that would even more really change what's going on with the receiver number two role.
Rebecca, speaking of receivers, what about tight end? What's the latest on Tyler Eifert? Obviously, they need him to be a big part of this offense.
Yeah, so Eifert right now, he started jogging for the first time this week. in my opinion, it doesn't look good for him to play in week one. I think week three is really the soonest we're going to see him. Right now, the team is not saying that. They're intent on saying that he's going to push to play week one. I don't see it happening. He hasn't even started running yet, or like he's not practicing. So we're about 3 weeks out, a little less right now, and I don't think that week one is going to happen for him. So Tyler Kroft is the number two tight end, and he's also hurt, also hasn't played in the preseason. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see what ends up happening there. I think the hope is that one of the two of them is back for week one, but that's really not a guarantee at this point.
I'm just waiting for them to have a receiving option not named Tyler, to be honest with you, as we look across this roster. In the running back position, Rebecca, you look at Jeremy Hill. We talk about Gio Bernard. What do you think the balance is going to be between those two guys? How will this offense utilize each of them?
So I really think that this year is going to be a big bounce back year for Hill. So far, he's looked really good in the preseason, and I think that the way that the season ended, which was also, you know, a lot of him fumbling the ball in the last 2 minutes when the game seemed all but locked up. So I think he has a really strong focus and is set on bouncing back to his 2014 form this year. He's actually not celebrating or doing any more touchdown dances, which we saw from him quite often last year. So I think he really has changed his mindset going into this season, and he's going to be the starter again. But I think especially with how many receivers they have out and with questions, Bernard is obviously going to be a big part of the run game and also probably as a pass catcher as well. So I would think that it's going to be maybe 60-40 or 70-30, a split between them, but that both will get in a lot of the action with Hill as the starter.
As you go through these final couple of games in the preseason for the Bengals and on towards the start of the regular season, Rebecca, what's the one thing you're still looking for, the one question mark or just something you're looking for out of this team before the regular season gets here?
Well, I think on defense, the big question right now is at defensive end. There's really not a lot of certainty outside of the starters. So Carlos Dunlap, Michael Johnson, they're great. They're one of the best tandems of defensive ends. But behind them, there's really no one at all that's proven to be a backup or come in rotationally. Margus Hunt was an experiment that they took on. Now he's in his fourth year. He hasn't done anything to prove that he's worthy of being on the team. Hasn't looked good this preseason, and they really need him to look good in the preseason. So I think that proving that they have someone who can step up at defensive end and be a rotational player who can come in is really a huge issue and question that they're going to have to deal with over the next 3 weeks before the season starts.
She's on Twitter at Rebecca_Toback, T-O-B-A-C-K, part of CincyJungle.com in the coverage of the Bengals. Rebecca, really appreciate the time on the podcast. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick, joins us. Stick around.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the league, and as we will do each week throughout the season, we're joined from the NFL Network. You find him on Twitter at Coach Billick. It is the coach, Brian Billick. And first of all, Coach, how's your offseason been?
It's been great. As usual, too short, but it's time for football, so we'll crank this thing up.
It always feels like it's too short. Let's talk about some of the stories from the offseason and even from training camp and beyond. A few interesting quarterback moves, so let's start here. First of all, what's your assessment of the Broncos quarterback situation and the decision Gary Kubiak's having to make?
Well, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, obviously L.A. doing it with Jared Goff and then Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, and then Paxton Lynch in Denver. At some point, you've got to know these guys are going to start. I mean, since the, Aaron Rodgers did it in 2005, and he's the poster child for those that say, okay, you shouldn't start a quarterback. Let him sit in and learn behind somebody else. Well, with all due respect, he sat in behind Brett Favre. That's a Hall of Famer. And Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're not sitting behind Hall of Fame. In my opinion, they ought to play. And it sounds like Paxton Lynch, particularly with a team like Denver, that's going to pack a great defense. They anticipate running the ball well. Why would you not start him?
And then when you go from Denver, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the NFC West. What about what Chip Kelly is dealing with in San Francisco with Gabbert, with Kaepernick? It feels like it's a very odd situation that he's trying to decide who his quarterback for 2016 is going to be.
Yeah, you know, look, the old adage is if you have two or three quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. I mean, it should be very clear-cut. And he may have already decided. You know, I think there's still an upside for Colin Kaepernick. We'll see how he fits in the Chip Kelly system. You'd think it would be fabulous. Blaine Gabbert, I think we've seen, is a backup, a good, solid backup in this league. I don't know that you're going to be a championship-caliber club. Colin Kaepernick still has a little of that upside. But the hard thing will be that this roster is not a great roster right now. It's not a great defense. You know, you hope that Carlos Hyde can stay healthy and run the ball. The receiving core, they have some potential there, but I don't know they have the absolute go-to guy, and that includes their tight ends. Vance McDonald is kind of pedestrian. So I think the group that he's going to be working with, along with the defense that's clearly having to rebuild, I think there's going to be some challenges for Chip in San Francisco.
What about a positive quarterback story, at least from what we've seen in the preseason so far, and that's Robert Griffin III in Cleveland. A lot of folks feel like maybe we're starting to see the RG3 that we saw at the very beginning in Washington.
Well, you hope so, because obviously this guy has a lot of talent. If he can stay healthy, and that's a big if, that's something obviously everybody's going to watch to see, because they keep saying, we're going to let Robert Griffin be Robert Griffin. Well, when Robert Griffin was Robert Griffin, when he was RG3, he got hurt. And so I'm looking for a guy that can he beat you from the pocket? Yeah, can he do the things outside? He's got potentially, and I'm hesitant to use that word because the old adage is in coaching, son, your potential is going to get me fired. But if there's some potential, it looks like Terrell Pryor has some upside in terms of the receiver. If indeed Josh Gordon can come back and be solid for them, if they can get that running game cranked up, then that's going to complement RG3 and give them a chance, obviously, to piece this thing together. And I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team, but they can be a good, solid, competitive team.
The buzz down in Dallas is, of course, all about Dak Prescott, and we know it's a limited sample size of preseason, but what were your thoughts on Prescott going into the draft, and are they coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Dak Prescott, this is different than the first-round conversation, which is good. Because for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously with Tony Romo, it's all about keeping Tony Romo healthy. But if you can get and reach down into the fourth round like they did for Dak Prescott, this is a talented guy. A lot of people will equate his game a little bit in terms of Russell Wilson. Now, that you say that, people go, oh, boy, well, this guy needs to be your starter. I'm just saying that he's a later draft choice that's showing some potential. I did see an interesting comment from him in talking about how he feels like he's ready for whatever the NFL is going to throw at him, whether it's a vanilla defense or, as he said, a rocky road defense. I think I'm ready. Well, let's hold on that. I prefer to have a rookie quarterback know just enough to be afraid, because I love the bravado, but the difference that he'll see in the regular season versus the preseason, notwithstanding Tony Romo staying healthy, but obviously for Dallas, they've got the best of both worlds. If indeed he can be a serviceable backup, get a young quarterback that they can develop, you couldn't ask for more than your backup quarter in your backup quarter position.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, as we go around the league. Coach, let's talk about a couple of coaching changes. How do you think the young Adam Gase, and I always wind up feeling older when I see a head coach who's 30, but nonetheless, a young Adam Gase, how do you think he'll do in Miami?
Well, he's got it set up to do very well. I mean, he was brought in. He's the current quarterback whisperer, so he's going to come in, and Tannehill is going to be that next protege, and that next quarterback. Indeed, can he transform this guy who's had a solid beginning in his career? That's how it's going to be judged, because the expectations in Miami are very high in terms of what they think they can do. Obviously, in that division, it's all about, can you supplant New England? I don't know if they're good enough to do that. So the next question is, are they good enough to be a wild card team? And that's a tall order in the AFC.
What about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia? What's your assessment of Peterson?
Well, he certainly brings the right pedigree in terms of having been a former player, being a part of successful teams with Andy Reid. He's certainly in a familiar situation. Let's go back and remember that Doug Peterson was brought in to be the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in Andy Reid's first year in 1999 to basically hold down the spot until Donovan McNabb could eventually take it over, which he did middle to late season. Now, that was a 5-11 team. He now is sitting on a team where he's got a couple quarterbacks, more than a couple. Sam Bradford, obviously, they paid all that money to. They went out and moved up and used a lot of assets to go get Carson Wentz. But I was up at their training camp, early in training camp, and had a chance to visit with Coach Pederson. And he and Howie Roseman, the general manager, seemed wholly committed to Carson Wentz not playing this year. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. As I said, since Aaron Rodgers took over or was drafted back in 2005, 29 quarterbacks have been taken in the first round, and only a handful have not played in the first year. Only four, to be exact: Aaron Rodgers, Jason Campbell, Grady Quinn, and Jake Locker. Now, that's not an impressive list outside of Rodgers. So those that want to make the camp, well, maybe you shouldn't play your quarterback in the first year. Hasn't turned out real well. So we're going to find out if Doug Peterson wants to emulate what he did for the Philadelphia Eagles and just kind of be a placeholder until they can get Carson Wentz into the starting lineup.
As you look at the NFL over the course of the last year, certainly the last 8 or 9 months, Coach, we've seen, whether it's the Al Jazeera report, we've seen Deflategate, we've seen a number of things going on. Are we in jeopardy at all with the league of Roger Goodell, any of the decisions or anything that he's doing? Is it starting to hurt the image of the league when it comes to the fans?
Well, I don't think so, particularly when we're talking, it's kind of talking out of both sides of the mouth when the media wants to say, well, is Roger Goodell too tough? Is he too authoritarian, as the players and the union will say? But by the same token, the NFL can't suffer these black eyes. He's got to get it under control. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We just saw the recent situation in the Olympics with Ryan Lochte. And how it's so often it's not the act itself, it's the cover-up or the lack of taking responsibility for it that is much, much more difficult. And that's what Roger Goodell and the league are trying to do, to make sure that these players understand there's going to be an accountability. There's a red line in the sand. And if you cross it, you're going to be held accountable for it.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. Last one for you, Coach. Give me a team that is going to surprise us, and it could be a team that we think isn't going to be very good, who's going to be better than expected, or a team that has high expectations that's going to underachieve.
Wow. Well, let's go with the positive on that. And you know, when we talk about this and the work I do for the NFL Network, for at that time of year where everybody wants to talk about that same thing about who are the teams that are going to surprise us? And the criteria is, okay, let's begin with the teams that weren't in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Because obviously you got to see what the Carolina Panthers do. Washington Redskins, who I think are going to be pretty good. Can they get back in the playoffs? But a team that clearly needs to do well for their coach, but I think his position could be pretty good, is Jacksonville. Now, they need to be good because obviously Gus Bradley's only got 10 or 11 wins, 12 wins over the last 3 years. But you've got to love, at least in the preseason and certainly in the third year, Blake Bortles seems ready, along with, you know, that great receiving core with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurn. The tight end position is a solid one with Mercedes Lewis. Julius Thomas, who they brought in last year in free agency, could step up and have a big year for them. And obviously in the running game, getting Chris Ivory to go with E.J. Yeldon. They're going to have some offensive weapons. And, of course, Gus Bradley went out and drafted a bunch of defensive guys who they're going to play. They don't have to be great defense, but they got to be better. This could be a team in the AFC South that really could be wide open that makes their way into the playoffs.
And they're benefited, Coach, aren't they, by the division that they're in? Sometimes the geography around you benefits you, that there isn't like a Patriots or a Carolina Panthers type team that they're trying to climb over either.
Yeah, and I regrettably, we always will start the season off and, okay, what coaches are on the hot seat and well, that division's on the hot seat, because every single one of those coaches, whether it be Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis, the expectations with a healthy Ryan Leaf, whether down on Mike Mularkey, all but a first year, you go, how can a first year coach be on the hot seat? Well, let's remember what happened in Jacksonville, where he went 1 year and got fired. The expectations that Marcus Mariota is going to be better, and obviously down in Houston, they went out and spent the big money on a quarterback that the Denver Broncos said they didn't want to spend the money on, and Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler's got to come through for Billy O'Brien, or it could be, you know, could be a problem for him. So I think that whole division of coaches is on a hot.
I say it every single year. You're a smarter football fan if you spend some time with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. Coach, look forward to visiting with you again throughout the season. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. It'll be fun.
Coming up next, it will be time for Overtime, a six-pack of questions, rapid-fire style, with the NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Overtime is next.
Overtime.
It is time for Overtime. That means we got a six-pack of questions, because what else do you do during overtime but make another trip to the bar and grab a six-pack so that you can enjoy it? This week, our guest in Overtime from the NFL Network is Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, how are you?
Nate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, my friend. You ready for a six-pack of questions here?
Are they alcohol-free?
Well, they are alcohol-free, just in case you've got to go in front of the camera here in a moment.
Good.
All right.
Double check. Go ahead.
Let's start here. Question number one. Which rookie quarterback is going to start first, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch?
Paxton Lynch.
And why is that?
Jared Goff might be my other answer. I think, no doubt, Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Rams out of the gate. They have two difficult division games right out of the gate, so you're not going to see Goff, I don't think, in September. Paxton Lynch, as of our taping, Nate, still has a shot, if he performs well in week three of the preseason, to get the starting job, as absurd as that sounded a couple of weeks ago. And I think Paxton Lynch very well could be the two behind Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian, somewhat unproven. That would put Paxton Lynch in a great position.
All right. Question number two. Do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to break Tony Dorsett's 1977 rookie rushing record for the Cowboys of 1,007 yards?
Yes.
In what week?
Well, you need to average 66 yards, roughly, I believe, or 65 or something like that, a week to get to 1,000. So do the math. I say he looks like a 1,200-yard back.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you on that one. All right, question number three. Do you think that Tom Brady's suspension is going to mean the end of the Patriots' run at the top of the AFC East?
Absolutely not. Call me except in December when they win the division.
All right, question number four. Will this intriguing Jacksonville Jaguars team, led by a defense they've been rebuilding, do you think they make the playoffs?
Ooh. I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say they make a run for it and look like a 9-7 team. I'm still not entirely sold, but I'm excited. When the schedule came out in April, I said Green Bay on the road week one at Jacksonville was your sneaky good game of September.
As you look at Cleveland, are we seeing the resurrection of Robert Griffin III?
Yes. The question is, how long will the life be once resurrected? He certainly looks good in the preseason. It is still the preseason. Pump your brakes, Dak Prescott fans. RG3 has proven he could play and win in this league. Can he do it as a drop-back passer? Can Hugh Jackson truly, truly give him sustained success? I don't know. I mean, the right side of it off, well, right tackle is an issue. They have some weapons offensively, but blocking and tackling still will be an issue, which doesn't always bode well for the quarterback. Don't be shocked if they are in the number one overall discussion next year. Maybe not at number one, but at least trying to trade up to get a certain quarterback from the ACC, who for the time being shall remain nameless because he's an underclass.
Let me do a follow-up to question number five. Do you think RG3 ever makes it back to the Pro Bowl?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater made the Pro Bowl last year, and I like Teddy, but he only had like 14 touchdown passes. The way people drop out of the Pro Bowl, I'll never say never for anybody making the Pro Bowl.
All right, last question from our six-pack in overtime with NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Do you believe by this time next year we will be referring to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I would say, because it's Vegas and we're playing the odds, that it is slightly better than 50-50 that we will. However, never underestimate the likelihood of an iconic franchise staying home with a last-second deal.
I have said that I'd never want to see a city lose their team, but given that I'm in Denver with the AFC West, it could be kind of fun with the Raiders in Vegas. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Nate, a man of your fame and your needs, you know, I can't imagine that you need a Raiders game to hop on a $79 one-way flight to Vegas.
As long as you're going to meet me there. It's Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, part of Overtime with our six-pack of questions for this week. Andrew, thanks.
Yes, sir.
And there you have it. That's how the Overtime works, a six-pack of questions for a different analyst each week. And it also wraps up our podcast for this week. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.